play-by-play voice for ESPN, Mark Jones. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hey, guys. What's good?
Now, everything. Good. Well, not so good. I mean, the Raptor game last night. It was good, like, with 3 seconds left. It was good at the buzzer.
Yeah, it was, man. It was one of the, you know, I guess most defining shots of the playoffs so far. When you think about game winners and buzzer beaters. And it's funny, it all depends on what prism you see that game through. Down here in Miami, everybody's mad because they feel like the fandom Heat Nation feel like they had to win a game twice last night. And after that miraculous Lowry shot, nobody really noticed, but the seeds for Miami's eventual victory were sown on the sidelines in the immediate wake of that after Dwayne Wade crumpled to his knees when the ball went through the net. He walked over to the sidelines and really jammed up his teammates hard. You know, he got into his teammates saying, let's finish the job this time. Let's get back to these next five and let's run this one and let's do it right. And, you know, when you think about championship lineage and championship culture, that eventually became a culture win for Miami. That's kind of the way they do things through the years.
Mark, why didn't the Heat foul on that play?
You know what? You're talking about the
Kyle Lowry miracle heave from half court. Why didn't they foul?
Yeah, the thing is, here's the thing. Justice Winslow was the closest one to him, but there was a little bit indecision there. And my guess is, because it's, as we call him down here, Rook 1, he may have been a little indecisive. I don't think that Spoelstra wanted to have him be the one to execute the foul and do it at the inappropriate time such that Lowry was in the motion of shooting a three. They give him 3 free throws. That's my theory on that.
You know, my theory is that Kyle Lowry, if you're going to let someone shoot the three last night from half court, Kyle Lowry would be the guy. He was like 1 for 700, right?
Yeah, that's the obvious one, right?
Yeah.
Let him fire away. I mean, interestingly enough, I think Lowry's 2 for 3 from that distance this year behind half court. I think I saw one of the stats from our research department had that. So maybe they didn't play the percentages right by letting Lowry shoot that. But, you know, if that's what it comes to for you to, you know, win a game, then I'm sure Miami 9 times out of 10 is still going to let them shoot that shot.
You know, and the interesting
thing, it's not like it was a reasonable 3-point. It was a half court heave.
Yeah, exactly. It was a prayer, right? Like, I mean, the chances of that going in and the percentages of that going in and every time are so much smaller than they are from closer to the three. But you know, the interesting part of that whole equation was, is that, you know, you think about what put him in that situation, and Miami didn't play well either. You know, this wasn't a game that either team played their best. This wasn't a game where one team completely dominated. You know, how many turnovers did Miami have? 16, 17 turnovers in the game?
They had 11 in the first half. That's deplorable, as Eric Spoelstra is fond of saying, you know?
Yeah, it absolutely was. So every team tried to let the other team win it. It was like they kind of traded. It was a weird game. They traded opportunities for each other as the game went on. And the interesting part, we've broken down what Kyle Lowry couldn't do. But did you see anything as a guy that calls the games? And I know you're going to be calling game 3, which you can also listen to on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, by the way. But did you see anything in that game from Kyle Lowry in as far as what Miami was doing to him? Or was this just a guy that's just cold as ice?
You know what? It was a combination of a couple things. He just continues to struggle offensively, and you know it totally is seems to be either a combination of a health and confidence issue or just a confidence issue right now. But in addition to what Miami's doing, you know, when they get Josh Richardson get on him defensively, you know that's when Spoelstra goes to DEFCON 5 with his defensive unit when he brings in, as we call them down here in South Florida, Rook 1 and Rook 2. When they bring in Winslow and Richardson, that's the defensive lineup, and that's when they really, I think, kind of lock in on Lowry and make things difficult for him, you know, blitz him coming off ball screens, double-team him, continue to make him struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny to watch. You know, we watched it all season long, a regular season team turn into a playoff team, and, you know, Toronto just lucky to be in the second round because there's two different teams that play here, right? You know, you think about some of the percentages, shooting percentages. Kyle Lowry, he's got, I don't know if you know this, he's got the worst shooting percentage in the playoffs in the last 50 years per 100 free field goal attempts. The worst. Larry Hughes, only second worst. He's 30.6% from the floor, Jonesy.
Yeah, it's weird, man. It's weird. And you know, Kyle Lowry is the type of guy, if you're picking sides on the playground, you're going to play ball, he's one of the first guys you're going to pick because he's tough. He's a Philly kid. He's got guts. He doesn't shy away from the moment. He doesn't get stage fright. He's just not playing well right now. And I'm going to make sure that everybody makes a huge distinguish something here that's really different. He's not shooting well. He's not shooting well. He's not playing great offensively. He still is impacting the game, you know, because there are two ends of this thing, and defensively, and he's making hustle plays. He's still playing well, and in that sense, impacting the game. He's simply not shooting the ball well and not shooting it and scoring it well enough, I think, ultimately, at this rate anyway, for Toronto to be successful in this series.
Mark, what's the latest on Chris Bosh? We hear a report last night floating around that he wants to get the PA involved, whether or not he can get back into the lineup, but the Heat don't want him back in because of those health concerns. What is the latest on Bosh?
Yeah, it's a complicated situation. And, you know, the Miami Heat and Chris Bosh do not have, there's no animosity between the two sides. Miami has a real family atmosphere down here in terms of their organization. They've always been that guy. Once you're a Heat player, you're a Heat player, a guy for life. They take care of their people. Bosh is part of the fold right now. But it's a little awkward right now. You know, sometimes even within certain families, you have awkward moments of disagreement, and that's what's happening right now. Chris wants to play. Miami doesn't feel confident in the various doctors' opinions of him being able to play right now, and they're at a stalemate. You know, just summing up.
When that stalemate include that they just don't want to listen. They as much as they love Chris Bosh, as much as they would love to have him in the series, the last thing they want to see is, you know, if indeed he has some kind of episode that actually happens on the court.
Yeah, and it's real. You know, like, it's real in terms of his health, blood clots. My father's 90 years old. He's been on blood thinners for almost half of his life. He's healthy and well, but he's not running up and down the court banging against seven-footers in the NBA. So it's a little bit different. And, you know, you got to remember that Eric Spoelstra played guard at Portland University. He was on the court when Hank Gathers died. He saw it. You know, so it's visceral for him. It's real for him in terms of the danger that might exist for Chris Bosh. Everybody down here feels terrible for Chris, and a little awkward for the organization too. In that, both sides wish it were different right now. I don't think there's going to be something determined and any resolution this year. And then you throw in another variable that there's a business side to this in terms of, you know, his contract. Whether the Heat collect potentially on any kind of disability or insurance. There's all kinds of financial components to this decision, too, on whether Chris Bosh can be moving forward in a Heat uniform or not.
Mark Jones, play-by-play voice, ESPN. Last question I wanted to ask you, and appreciate you doing this. By the way, I don't know if people know this, the younger brother of Paul Jones, who wins in a fist fight, you or Paul?
You know, we don't even do that anymore. We used to when we were kids, and then my dad won. You know what I mean? My dad always won those, so we learned to cut that stuff out real early. You know, they walk into the room and say, "Who broke this lamp?" And we say, "Nobody." And we both ended up losing. You know, he reached for his waist. It was like that. So,
yeah. The belt comes out, and then you go, "Hey, everything's cool now." Yeah.
Yeah. No, we just play ball, guys. It's all good.
The last question I want to ask you is: we watched the way that OKC Spurs game ended up, and the refs say, "Yeah, we missed one. Big deal. We'll learn from it and move on. We'll take it into consideration." Yesterday, the officiating wasn't great either. And if you ask me, in the playoffs, by and large, they've missed a lot, and I mean a lot. What's the word when you guys talk. I know you guys, the patent answer for commentators is that's a tough call when a team gets ripped off. But what's the consensus with guys in the business, guys calling games about officiating so far in these playoffs?
I wish we didn't have the last 2 minute report. That's my thing. I don't think that it's necessary. I think Adam Silver, the commissioner, is trying to show transparency, which I think is great in practice. I think all it does is highlight mistakes. And I think now it's gotten to a point where the officials almost are undermined too much. Keep in mind now, the NBA officials are literally the most scrutinized referees and officials in all of professional sports. Literally, every call that they make during a game is logged and cataloged and evaluated by crew chiefs and higher aboves after every game, after every preseason game, after every regular season game, after every playoff game. There is a true meritocracy in terms of which officials get to officiate playoffs and up the ladder to the conference opening round, semifinals, conference finals, NBA finals. It is a true meritocracy. So if you look at their percentages overall, these NBA officials, they're batting around on in the big picture when you take it back to preseason, they're batting around 99%. It's just that their 1% is highlighted so much in the last 2 minute report. It's tweeted out. And I'm not trying to be an officiating apologist. They make mistakes, but their great calls don't go on the last 2 minute report. They don't go on the first 46 minute report. They go on the last 2 minute report. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, an opportunist, right? But it's so much easier to highlight the negative. It's just some of them have been glaring. Yeah. Like that OKC game was unbelievable.
Yeah. I just, in short, I think the basketball gods have a way of making things play out the correct way. Mm-hmm. I really do. And I'd like to see some of the last 2 minute stuff just go away.
Mark Jones.
That's my thought on it.
I don't disagree, and you got to play through it anyway. And they don't make you go 3 for 13 from the floor. The refs don't do that, right?
Yeah. It ultimately, I mean, look at that OKC play. Okay, Deion Waiters may have committed an offensive foul, technical foul, whatever you want to call it. But you know what? San Antonio still had an opportunity to win that game.
Sure.
They still had a lot of time to get a couple of shots off. They didn't.
Absolutely.
And Kevin Durant got fouled, by the way. That they missed that too. So right there it evens out. And San Antonio got the ball. So, it like I said, it all weighs out and it plays out, I think, the way it's ultimately supposed to.